So bottom line, there's this just immense opportunity, both with the Clear Horizons Act and these water quality protection bills, to make progress at the state level, despite what is happening at the federal level.
We did it, folks. We made it through the year that was January 2025. And even though the world feels like a real mess right now, this is also a moment where so many people are standing together, speaking truth to power, and taking action for what matters in every way possible. One of those ways, a big one, is through the state legislative sessions happening across the country right now, where coalitions are working hard to move vital intersectional efforts through the government, calling on representatives to take steps for real climate and social justice progress at a time where these areas are especially under constant attack. Welcome to Stories of Kinship, an audio experiment, or maybe we should just call it a podcast, who's to say, by Western Environmental Law Center, also known as WELC. My name is Suze Ware, I use she, her pronouns, and I'm on the communications team here. Today, I'm talking with my WELC coworkers, Eric Schlinker-Goodrich and Brian Sweeney, about a few of the incredible bills and advocacy efforts for climate happening in the New Mexico legislative session right now. You'll hear us dive into the details and context for these bills, what they would mean for New Mexico, the community movements making all of these possible, and we'll close with some ideas for staying focused and fired up during this insane time. Okay, let's get started. Hello, it's great to see you both. Thank you for being here. Welcome to the studio, aka the computers, where we are remotely recording right now. I'd love to start with introductions. Can you both share your names, pronouns, and your role at WELC and where you two are today?
Hey, Suze. This is Eric Schlinker-Goodrich. I am WELC's executive director. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm based in Taos, New Mexico.
Howdy ho. This is Brian Sweeney, the communications director at WELC. I use he, him pronouns, and I live in Santa Fe.
Woohoo! You both do fantastic things and also happen to have an extensive knowledge of New Mexico policy issues, legal battles, water rights, etc. So you're the perfect people to be talking to right now as the 2025 session gets started in New Mexico. First off, what is it like jumping into state level legislative work during the federal chaos we're seeing right now?
It is at one level whiplash to be flipping back and forth between the federal level and the state level, but we definitely see opportunity at the state level to continue to make progress even as we hold the line at the federal level. Right after Trump was elected, we stepped back and took a look at how do we adapt to the current political environment. And what we landed on was a basic three-part approach. The first was hold the line at the federal level, and that means doing what we're really good at, which is litigating a bit against really bad federal agency actions to drill on federal public lands, to fragment our public lands such that they don't provide clean air and clean water or room to roam for wildlife species. So at the federal level, we know we're going to have to hold the line in the coming months and years, and we're doing that actively. The second part was to move in space to where we could make progress. And New Mexico is a place where we know we can make progress. We've been making progress here in the state for decades. And we have a particular opportunity here in New Mexico because our 60-day legislative session just started. And we're at the tail end of Governor Lujan Grisham's administration. And I think she is really looking at this session as an opportunity to build her legacy. And there are a lot of really powerful legislative champions in our Senate and in our House who want to get stuff done. And it's fantastic. So the other thing I'll say on here is that with both the federal and state level is we're trying to build power for change with coalitions and partners. Our model of advocacy intrinsically demands that we partner with organizations across the Western United States. And we represent in any given year 150 to 200 different national, regional, state, and local advocacy organizations and community organizations. So in many respects, yeah, we're feeling whiplash, but I think we also feel this really profound sense of agency, and even amidst all of the very dark things that are happening on the federal level. And I think our sense is that we can light a fire at the state level that can be a beacon of hope for folks.
I definitely think we could all use a beacon of hope right about now. Thank you for that. To get into the details a little bit, what are the key priorities WELC is working to support in the New Mexico session this year?
Climate and water. Those are two really, really important priorities in New Mexico. You know, let's start with water. Just within the last few years, the Supreme Court has radically scaled back the scope of protection provided by the Federal Clean Water Act. In a Supreme Court decision called Sackett v. EPA, the court decided to elevate property and economic interests over the public interest in clean water. And when they did that, they essentially gutted the Clean Water Act and its ability to protect rivers and streams, especially in the arid and semi-arid West. And no state is more vulnerable to the Supreme Court's shenanigans than New Mexico. Roughly 95%, upwards of 95% of New Mexico's surface waters are at risk of losing protection under the Federal Clean Water Act. That would mean unbridled pollution into our New Mexico waters. So a really, really serious problem. The good thing is that the state has stepped up to address that vacuum. And one of the ways that they're doing that is with these two bills that are now pending in the New Mexico legislature, SB 21 and SB 22. And what these bills do in short is they take over the federal Clean Water Act permitting program framework called primacy, where the state can use its local expertise, understanding of our state's waters to issue federal permits under the Clean Water Act. But because of SACA v. EPA and the fact that the Supreme Court has rolled back, radically eviscerated so much of those federal Clean Water Act protections, the state is also putting in place a safety net program to protect all state waters, no matter what the federal government decides to do, no matter what the Supreme Court decides to do. So in that safety net program, water quality standards will ensure that all of New Mexico's rivers and streams, all of our lakes and wetlands are protected and have to meet strong science-based water quality protections. So that's one front on the water side. The second front is climate. And of course, at the federal level with climate change, we're seeing the Trump administration just roll back everything it possibly can in their fight against all sorts of what they perceive as radicals like us. I think what we're doing is radical in the sense that we're trying to challenge the immense power of the fossil fuel industry, the big tech industry, who is very much aligned with the administration. So in New Mexico, the state legislature, under the leadership of Senator Pro Tem Mimi Stewart, has drafted legislation called the Clear Horizons Act. That is a really compelling piece of legislation to address climate pollution in New Mexico. And under Clear Horizons Act, the state would be obligated to reduce New Mexico's greenhouse gas pollution 45% below 2005 levels by 2030, 75% below 2005 levels by 2040, and 100% reduction of emissions by 2050. In addition to that, there are two companion bills that are really important to mention. The first is a community benefits bill that will provide $300 million for various communities to work through the energy transition and to address the climate crisis. And the other bill, the third bill, is an Innovation in State Government Act that would provide resources to state agencies who are acting with creativity and imagination to address the climate crisis. So if they have a good idea, but they need funding for that, they would be able to apply and get a grant from this pot of funding to be able to do really good things relative to climate change. So bottom line, there's this just immense opportunity, both with the Clear Horizons Act and these water quality protection bills, to make progress at the state level, despite what is happening at the federal level.
I'll note too that yesterday, the Clear Horizons Act was heard in Senate Conservation. And when the chair of that committee asked people to raise their hands in support versus people to raise their hands in opposition, the room was, I would say, 95% hands up for supporting a livable climate. It was really great to see. I mean, the Santa Fe Girls School was there, probably about 15 or 20 strong. The advocacy community was out there, and it passed. So it's going on to its next committee. And we don't have a schedule for that yet, I don't think. But we will communicate with people who like our stuff on social media and email, sign up for our emails on our website, westernlaw.org, and we'll send you action alerts about the progress of these bills.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Brian. And one thing that I'd lift up here, too, is the fact that the governor's office was there in force to support the Clear Horizons Act. You know, at the Western Environmental Law Center, we've had our differences of perspective with Governor Lujan Grisham, but credit where credit is due, that the governor's office showed up in support of this bill. Secretary Kenney of the New Mexico Environment Department was very effective in providing expert perspective to the Senate Conservation Committee on this bill. So I think we are very gratified that the governor is showing up strongly here, that there is really strong leadership at the legislative level. And it's really inspired just a huge groundswell of support for Clear Horizons amongst kids and youth and advocacy groups and community groups. So we feel really good, especially after yesterday morning's hearing where a committee passed the bill out.
As terrifying as it is to see the climate threats and just like threats to the fabric of democracy that we're seeing right now, it's pretty awesome to hear how many people are coming together over the mutual need for water, for clean air, and for protections that can function even when national priorities are not working towards those goals. Let's dive into the groundswell of support you mentioned during this moment. Like, who are some of the advocacy groups making these efforts possible? How are they working together, both on Clean Horizons, and it sounds like on the water bills as well?
Yeah, you have a lot of overlapping coalitions. You see advocacy organizations across the spectrum really stepping up into leadership roles to move super positive, super important policy. With Clear Horizons Act, we have fantastic partners at the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club, the Center for Civic Policy, with NAVA, an indigenous-led advocacy organization. You also have the SEMEA project that is supporting the bill, NRDC, Environmental Defense Fund. And what's really, I think, awesome about this coalition is it is inclusive of traditional environmental organizations, but also social justice organizations and civic-minded organizations that are really keen on furthering a just transition from fossil fuels to renewables. In other words, it's not just about reducing greenhouse gas emissions. That's, of course, a really key part, but it's about supporting communities and the state to transition in a way that builds resilience and diversifies our economy. On the waterfront, what I'd note is that there are groups like Amigos Bravos who, again, also are looking to protect rivers and streams, but do so through a social justice lens. So in New Mexico, I think, is just a fascinating state in terms of how it approaches issues, because if you want to move environmental protections, you really have to take into account communities. And that's a beautiful thing, because then you get really strong policies that can build support and then also get things done in terms of environmental and climate protection.
This collective effort is what we need to see from the climate movement everywhere, aka it needs to not just be the climate movement. It has to be an intersectional movement for an environmentally and socially just future. We need groups across sectors to work together, to support each other, to hear each other's needs and speak up for them. I think this ties in really well with moving from talking about the policies and support for them more so to how we can all take action from where we are. Right now, you know, there are countless attacks being unleashed at the federal level on climate justice, as well as on human rights. Data and even the mention of climate change is being removed from federal government websites. Folks doing really important diversity, equity, and inclusion work are being fired or threatened to stop immediately. Our non-binary and trans friends are under major attack, not to mention the safety of children trying to navigate the immigration system and being scared to show up at school. Anyone attempting to move through the world with empathy right now, I think, is having a pretty hard time keeping up with everything and trying to figure out how to help in the midst of that. Still, even though it's a lot, I think there's this huge sense of wanting purpose and to be in solidarity with each other wherever we are. With that energy in mind, do you have one or two recommendations for folks to keep focused and fired up, even as these impacts of this moment are truly heavy for so many of us right now?
The day after the election, I emailed staff, and the first thing I said was that we have agency. Never forget that. And I'd encourage everyone to think about what they can do that's within their realm of power. Every one of us has power. The other thing I would say, in addition to agency, is ground yourself in principle. Realize that much of what is happening right now is not normal. Write down what you think is what is important to you in this moment, and stay true to that. Remember what is important. Remember how you feel. Remember what you want to change in the world, and then move forward on that front. So that sense of agency, grounded in principle, really, really, really key. And one of the things that's gratifying for me is that at Western Environmental Law Center and with our partner organizations, it is so rooted in the values of the West in terms of clean water and clean air and protected public lands and wildlife who have the freedom to roam across their ancient homelands. Like these are really important principles and values that we will stay true to and not forget as we move through the turbulent waters of the coming months and years under the Trump administration. You know, I know a lot of folks out there as individuals are wondering what they can do. You know, they're not an environmental lawyer. They can't take the Trump administration to court. But some of the things that you can do are just keeping track of what's going on. Support organizations like the Western Environmental Law Center. Look out for our action alerts or the action alerts of our partners for moments of time to show up at a state legislative hearing. Those moments in time make a difference. And when we reach out to folks and ask them to mobilize and support or in opposition to a particular action action, it's because we know strategically that those are moments where change can happen. I mean, let's just look at what's happened over the last 48 hours or so, where the federal government, the Trump administration, decided to pause all federal spending on a huge host of problems to protect air quality and public health and to further environmental justice. And they did so in a way that was half-baked, and they got sued over that. And a federal court imposed a stay on what the federal government was doing. And within 24 hours, the Trump administration walked back their order ending all of that federal funding. And so that shows the power when people can come together and really stand up and speak truth to power, to use our existing guardrails in the United States, including the federal court system, to make a difference. That gives me a sense of optimism that if we work together, if we stand together in solidarity, we will be able to make immense progress. And I know progress will be difficult in these moments, but at least we'll be able to hold the line.
That's true. And for me, it's rooted in, you said, how do we care for people? And how do we help people we care about? And my answer to that is we offer to care for them directly. I just got an email today from somebody you both know, our friend Renata, who now works for the Park Service. And she was anxious. And I sent her some words of reassurance and encouragement and, you know, offered to be a sounding board for her and things like that. And that goes for our people who are in categories that the people in power right now are working against. If you know a trans person, non-binary person, just offer to be there for them, because sometimes it's hard to ask. As far as like advocacy, I would recommend, if you're feeling a buildup of energy that you don't know what to do with, write a letter or an email or make a call to your representatives in your state or on the federal level. The offices there really value that kind of thing. And if you feel like your representatives wouldn't listen to you, then write a letter to the editor of your newspaper. Look up their email address. You can send it over email. Look up the word count, send it in. It's an incredibly effective way to help change things for the better. People read those. Decision makers read those. Newspapers love to have them. It's free content for them. There are things you can do other than just sit back and wait.
Yeah, one thing Brian is underscoring is an axiom that I think of, which is political leaders aren't so much leaders as they are followers. And who are they the followers of? They're followers of the people. And we can change and create space for them to move in a way that is consistent with our values. More you call, more you write, more you help support advocacy organizations who are holding government accountable, the more those politicians will step in, follow your leadership, and truly take action at the federal level, where they can be rightly described as political leaders and champions of our values and our causes.
Let's go. Yes, these are awesome. Direct support and showing up for the people in your life, email alerts and talking with legislators, getting your ideas out in a newspaper, joining organizations through your work or as a volunteer to support broader coalition efforts. I would also add boycotting companies that are actively working against what matters to you or egregiously profiting off the exploitation of land, animals, and people. These are all really good options for taking action, and they can be approached with a wide range of time, resources, and accessibility. Like, showing up at a public hearing is awesome, and so is making sure your neighbor knows you care about them, or writing up some thoughts on protecting the places, people, and creatures you love. Recently, one of my best friends and I have been meeting every week to build this like really wonky and detailed PowerPoint about local government so we can be more informed residents, because you know what? No one gets enough info about how our government works in schools. Anyway, that's a tangent. Main point is I'm looking forward to seeing how we all grow and learn really rapidly throughout this time and step into our power and the beautiful forms that will take. So thank you both for sharing those. And any final thoughts as we close here?
I'd love to leave people with a quote from a Mary Oliver poem. And the quote is, "Joy is not made to be a crumb." And so in this moment, as you're exercising your agency, as you are rooting yourself in principle, remember to find joy. Joy is what is going to underpin how strong we are as a movement, how strong we are in solidarity with each other, and how truly rooted we will be in the land and places that we care about. You know, you go out into places that I love, like the Valle Vidal in northern New Mexico, I find joy that infuses me with power and infuses me with a sense of responsibility for the world.
That's right. We aren't stuck with crumbs. We are allowed full cookies of joy, even when life feels as crumbly as the Nature Valley granola bar your mom just handed to you because you said you needed a snack when really you just wanted cheese. Ah, cheese. That's a good place to end. Thank you both so much for taking the time, and good luck as hearings continue and we keep working our way through the legislative session. For anyone listening, we will be sharing more opportunities to get involved soon through our website and email alerts. So as Brian shared earlier, sign up for those at westernlaw.org and follow us on socials to stay posted on our legal efforts and action updates. I promise we even make LinkedIn fun, or at least we make LinkedIn have more wildlife photos on there, which is the same thing. Okay, thank you again. It's been great talking with you, and let's keep it up out there.
Onwards.
Thanks so much, Suze.